Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. This afternoon, we are extending our show and doing another so much better set of segments with the editors at American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine. You know, I'm here on site with them, and I've got Jennifer Keltner, Elizabeth Beasy, and Jill Mead, and we are sitting here sort of this round table chatting about all the different parts it takes to make a quilt. And in the first show, Jennifer, we did a lot of the sort of front work about how to get started, cutting, pressing, and now there's more, isn't there?
Exactly. Today we're going to start out talking about applique, and there's probably no topic that strikes fear in the hearts of so many quilters as applique, but we're really going to try to dispel the myth. Mm-hmm. It's not hard. No. It does take some practice and some experimenting, but there are great ways to applique, and if you've never tried it before, hopefully we'll encourage you to give it a try and to have great success at doing it.
I know. I'm an applique junkie. I mean, that's my thing. I like to make shapes, all kinds of shapes, and I find them much faster and much easier with applique rather than piecing. That's, you know, I just am like out there to convert the world. All the quilters should applique.
Well, I used to say for a long time that I was always just collecting pictures of applique quilts.
Right.
If I went to buy a book or a pattern, I was always buying the most intricate applique patterns, but I hadn't really tried it for a number of years.
Right,
and then
right.
Once I got started, I found out how great it is to travel. You can always take an applique block with you and have a little project to work on the plane or in the car, in the hotel room, and over time, you add all those things up and you can have a really fabulous quilt in the end. So I've become an applique convert.
Yay. You know, we have lots of techniques for applique.
Right.
And that's one of the things we wanted to break down for the show, is talk about ways to do machine applique and ways to do hand applique. And I think we're going to start with machine.
Right. Let's start, first of all, talking about fusible, because for a lot of people, that's their intro to applique, is fusible applique. And you are probably one of the foremost experts on fusible. No. So why don't you kick us off, Pat?
Oh, my gosh. I love, love, love fusible. If you love your machine and you are a piecer, there is no better transition than using your machine to make shapes, because it is no different. You just have to do a little, you know, a little different technique. It's fast. It's simple. It's not difficult. And it's durable. So if you want to make quilts that are washed and you have, you know, machine applique, they're very, very sturdy. And anybody can do it. They really can. And fusible is not cheating. Sometimes people think, oh, well, I'm cheating. I'm not doing it by hand. Well, that's like saying, you know, machine quilting or machine piecing would be cheating.
Right. No rewards for suffering.
No. It's just, you know, it's just a technique. And fusible is my choice of the moment.
So do you use a lightweight fusible? Do you have a preferred type that you like to use?
I do. I use a brand called Heat and Bond Light, because I prefer to cut away a lot of the fusible and use it more like a basting. And I know Jill really likes that method too. And it has a lot of names, doesn't it, Jill?
Do we have one of the names we hear it called by, the donut method?
Yes, or the windowing or the cutaway, so that you're creating less bulk.
Right. It's like a little window frame around just that narrow little area, maybe a quarter inch wide around the inside of the shape.
Right, the inside.
And the rest of it doesn't have the fusing material, and so it's nice, soft, supple. Not that heavy feeling that we used to associate with fustables.
Right. I think in the past what people did, and they still do it, lots of people still do this, because particularly you're doing a table runner, you're doing something quick, you don't want to take the time, the extra steps to do the cutaway, they're doing full fusible. So you think you have a heart. The whole shape has the fusible, which is like a glue, underneath. And so when you put it down on your fabric to fabric, it can be stiff. And if it's a big shape, it can be pretty, you know,
pretty sturdy.
Sturdy, yes. That would be a nice word for it. But when you do, that's fine. It's fine for certain projects. But if you want to have it soft, then do the donut. And your stitches just cover that fusible. It's like a basting. That's what I tell people. It's just like just using it to baste. You're not, you know, it's not on there forever. Your stitching is going to hold it on.
Well, I heard you one time, too, say, Pat, that area that you cut out on the inside of the fusible mm-hmm. makes it very economical because you can save those pieces and use them for another project.
You do. If you think a big, great big heart shape and you're just cutting out another heart from the center of it, which is you're going to be reusing, you can make berries and leaves and other things. So you keep that and it makes your product life longer. You can do more with it. It's just, I love it.
I think one of the other things that's a common mistake, it's not so important if you can't find exactly the right brand when you go, but you do really have to pay attention to having a lightweight or sew-through fusible web mm-hmm. because if you accidentally buy the ultraweight or the heavyweight, you can gum up your machine needle and you'll think, you know, this isn't for me. And it really is just the choice in using the wrong material.
Right. When you read some of the products, they actually are called crafting bonds. And they say on them, do not sew. And they mean it because, you know, ask me how I know. I've tried it. No, that can't really be true. I accidentally bought this. I'm going to use it anyways. And then you end up getting your needle gummed up. But it's really the product. And there's lots of good fusibles now that are really thin that you can leave the whole thing. And they're really still not as thick as some of the products that you may have used in the past.
And what kind of stitches do you use when you're doing your fusible, Pat?
I personally like the blanket stitch. You know, I'm sort of, you know, been married to the blanket stitch for a long time. We have a long, lovely relationship. And so it's sort of my go-to stitch. But there are a whole lot of other stitches happening. I mean, like Elizabeth, when you're seeing some of the quilts coming in, the newer quilts, like, you know, the young quilters are doing it fast. They're not using a blanket stitch.
Well, sometimes you see either a zigzag, whether it's a small zigzag or something that's bigger, or a free motion straight stitch all around the edge. Mm-hmm. That is a really fun way of really quickly and easily adhere or stitching along the edge. You don't have to, and if you do it free motion, if you drop your feed dogs, is mm-hmm. what I mean, then you don't have to try to maneuver the piece around and turn corners. All you do is lower those feed dogs, and you can stitch easily all the way around the shape of your applique.
Yeah, and that takes a little tiny bit of practice because it's like free motion quilting when you drop the feed dogs. But it is nice because then you can fuse the whole thing. And you have a much bigger quilt, and you won't have to be turning. I mean, you just think about it. If you have a little berry, and you're turning. But if you drop your feed dogs and move like that, then you have a lot faster. I'm fast. I like fast.
And if you use a matching thread or if you use a good monofilament thread, you really can't see a lot of that anyway. So it's really just adhering those edges so it's permanent.
Now, there are some other ways to do machine applique.
Absolutely. It doesn't have to be fusible.
Yeah. So what's a popular one that you're seeing coming in on some of the quilts that are coming in the magazine?
So a lot of the machine applique that's not done with fusible, mm-hmm. They use a combination of materials. So freezer paper, starch, heat-resistant template plastic. So a combination of all of those things that will help someone turn under the edges of their applique. So it's no longer raw edge mm-hmm. applique like you would do in fusible.
Right.
You've got that finished edge, so it looks a lot of times like it is hand appliqued, but mm-hmm. you have the ease and the speed of doing it on the machine.
And stitch type for the turned under edges, the prepared shapes, that's a whole like other sort of science of how to get that looking like it's handwork. People work to perfect that.
They do. I mean, we've got people like Kim Deal and Cherie Ralston. Mm-hmm. They both are experts at that, and they have slightly different techniques or different stitches and materials that they use. Cherie uses a thread that matches the matches the applique fabric,
right.
not the background.
Right.
That's usually a key in any applique.
Right.
Match your thread to the applique.
Yeah.
Yes, to the shape, not to the background. But she uses a good quality 50 or 60 weight thread if
Which
she can
is
find
thinner.
It. Yes, it's very thin. And she prefers a cotton machine embroidery thread because mm-hmm. she can find it in so many colors, and she can it's got that very fine thickness that she wants.
Mm-hmm.
And she uses usually either a blind hem stitch or a variable overlock stitch, it's called on some machines. It's a different, little, slightly different machine. Or just a super narrow zigzag. So really narrow and really short. And you just stitch right along the edge of your machine or of the applique. It is sometimes so hard to tell if it's done by hand or done by machine.
Those two gals are very good at it. They've worked hard at perfecting that. And one of the keys for that stitch is that there's usually a straight part and then a little bite, like a little V. And the straight part should be on the background, and the little V should be biting into the fabric, rather than you don't want the straight line on your applique shape.
Exactly.
You want it right into the background.
It should be right on the background,
right next to your
shape, and then the little bite into the fabric, as you call it, should only be a couple threads in.
Right.
And it just needs to secure it to the fabric. It doesn't have to be heavy duty, you know.
I have a tip there, too. If you have a machine where your decorative stitch allows you to move the needle position, not all machines allow you, but if it does, move your needle position all the way to the right. And then when you're running along the side of the applique shape, use the inside of your presser foot and use an open toe foot. And you run the inside right along your shape, and your needle's always going to be right where it should be, so you don't have to guess.
That's a great tip. I think part of what helps people be successful when they're doing machine applique, and if they really want the look of mock hand applique with that, is in the preparation of those pieces.
Oh, yeah.
And
getting
whether
the shapes.
You choose freezer paper shape or the starch method where you're turning under the things. And Ann Sutton, who's known for her beautiful applique, she does the starch method. And one of the tips that she always shares with us when she has a project is to check to see if you're turning the edges of your starch applique under, that those edges are smooth. And you don't want any folds or bumps in it. And if you do have some, re-wet the section with starch and try again. And I think sometimes there is a lot of work that goes into the preparation of appliques if you're using the starch method, but you need to be patient and really look at your work before you go to put it onto your quilt top, and you'll often be happier with what happens. The other thing that I find for machine applique when I'm doing it that I love is if you have a machine that has an automatic presser foot lifter, where it lifts the presser foot just a little bit so you can pivot your applique, leave your needle down in the fabric, and rotate your piece. That's so easy. And I know for some people that's the knee lift.
The knee lift. I love my knee lift. If you own a knee lift, put it in your machine. It's so useful. It's your third hand. You know, you need three hands, because otherwise you're having to put your hand in there and lift your presser foot up manually, because you have to turn, turn, turn to keep on the edge of the shapes. And people are doing stuff to get those shapes smooth.
They are. And you know, those tiny little shapes are kind of hard to get smooth.
Get perfect. People like...
And you've got that great big iron that you're trying to get those little edges under. So instead of using your finger, which is a little bit too big and a little close to the iron, use a little bamboo skewer or a seam ripper that's just the point of it to hold those little tiny pieces in place while you press them.
While you press them, right. Because you can also melt your nail polish. You know, ask me how I know that, too. Yeah, it's not a good thing. So let's see. Do we have any other fabulous tips for machine applique? We have,
you know, one thing if you're doing this machine applique, or the invisible heirloom applique is what we call it by machine. You know, Kim Deal actually uses a really fine monofilament thread. Again, that covers a multitude of sins because it's pretty much invisible. So
yes.
If you have any questions or doubts about your abilities, just start with a good quality monofilament thread, and no one will ever see it, but your pieces will be appliqued securely. So just give that a try.
Yeah. I think everybody should go out and try machine applique, one form or another. It's like my quest.
Amen.
Yes.
Well, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, the infamous hand applique, because, you know, lots of people love that, too. So this is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We'll be right back.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to Facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Whatever your style, whatever your skill, you'll find everything you need to start sewing today at PatternSpot.com, the downloadable pattern marketplace. It's a one-stop shop with hundreds of designers and thousands of patterns all online under one virtual roof. Go to PatternSpot.com and sign up for our email list to get 20% off your next purchase. From quilts, home decor, and wearables to fabric crafts and accessories, PatternSpot.com is your one-stop pattern shop.
Beautiful computerized quilting is simple with the HQ Pro Stitcher. Every design becomes a perfect fit for your quilt with the HQ Pro Stitcher. You can resize, repeat, rotate, and crop right on the new 10-inch color touchscreen. No computer needed. The HQ Pro Stitcher works with all HQ Stitch regulated machines and has a quick setup that allows you to get quilting in no time.
Visit HandyQuilter.com to request a free demo DVD or find an HQ rep in your area. Handy Quilter. Designed by a quilter for quilters.
Make your projects so much easier with great products from Sewline. Sewline offers a variety of innovative quality marking tools for quilters and sewers. The Sewline Trio is a 3-in-1 fabric marking tool that allows you to quickly change from black ceramic to white lead to a blank stylus with just one click. Both leads are water-soluble and designed to provide a crisp, clean line that's easy to erase. To purchase Sewline products, visit your local quilt shop.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com. Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, here with the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting and Quilts and More magazine. We are dishing about techniques, and we just talked about machine applique. And hand applique is its partner, its friend. And people will do one, both, neither, but we're going to convert everybody today to applique. So when we start, Jill. Needles.
Start with the needles. Applique artist Bettina Havig has a great tip. She said hand sewing needles have a right and a wrong side to the eye, which I wasn't aware of.
I didn't know that.
So she said if you're having a hard time threading a needle, rotate it to the opposite side, and you'll be surprised at how much easier it is to thread. Quick turn pays off.
Oh, you know, that's a good tip. But do we have a favorite needle? What's your favorite needle?
Oh, I'm a straw needle for applique.
For hand applique?
Mm-hmm. I use the same thing. I use a straw needle.
Yeah, I like it too. But I think Jennifer's different.
It depends on what I'm doing. But I did a lot of wool applique. So mm-hmm. I like an 18 or a 24 embroidery needle. And then for doing embroidery stitches with like pearl cottons, mm-hmm. I love the number one milliner's needle that is straight. It's really long, kind of like a straw needle, but a little bit thicker, little bit bigger eye that I can see easier to thread. And I love that needle for making bouillon stitches.
Cool. Now, okay, I have to ask, because this is my deep, dark secret. Do you like your needles straight or do you like them curved? Like when you take it out of the box and they're straight.
Straight and brand new.
Straight.
I've never tried a curved needle, but now I have to try it. Well, I mean, I've tried a curved needle for tying a quilt. But
right. No. When you take it out, and if you've used a needle for a little while, it starts to get a nice little bend in it, particularly the milliners, the straws. And so I actually take them out of the container, and I bend them. I put them between my fingers. On purpose. And I bend them on purpose because I like that slight curve that they have. And sometimes it drives people crazy because I know people who throw it away when they start to curve.
Right. So what our radio listeners can't see here is all three of us with our mouths hanging open going, she bends the needle on purpose? Who knew? It's like deep, dark secrets from Pat.
Does it help you sweep under the edge or just what?
I think it's comfortable in my hand is what it is. It's more comfortable in my hand. The way I hold the needle is that it's just more natural because I eventually was bending them anyways. And as they got more bent, I was more, you know, I liked it better and realized I could just bend them right from the start. I didn't have to wait.
You were liberated.
I was. Get it out. Bend it. Let's go.
Well, how about thread, Pat? What kind of thread do you like? I've heard that 80 weight is great or silk thread. What do you like?
I use, right now I'm using a lot of 50 weight. And I am using Orofil, and their 50 is really nice. It's thin, but there are 60 weights, and I like those too because they're also even thinner. I'm not a silk person. Silk doesn't like me. It falls out of the needle. It won't stay in there. It makes me insane. And so I had to give all my silk away. I just, you know, but other people swear by it. I mean, it's just.
And what length of thread do you start with?
Oh, if I could use 3 miles, that would be fine. It just does not work out. I don't know what that problem is. So I have to do like an arm's length and then be really, you know, try a little bit more. I usually do an arm's length and a little bit more. How much more?
I think everybody has that natural instinct because you want the longest piece possible so you don't have to rethread that.
Right.
But I have discovered if I'm disciplined about using a 15 or 16 inch, maybe up to 18 inch length, but nothing longer,
no.
I deal so much less with tangles and knots that I'm happier.
Oh, really?
And it overcomes.
Yeah.
Oh.
A shorter length. I know. It feels
wrong. I don't think I could convert to that. I don't think I could handle it. No
it's
way.
Because you're a needle bender.
That's it. That's it. Do you thread up a whole bunch of them and stick them in a pin cushion?
I always have good intentions of doing that, but I never do.
I know. I was thinking
one at a time.
One, so you don't have an extra, like,
no.
Not like the bobbin thing with
no.
you. So there's no set of needles all packed up ready to thread. Would you remember that case? There's a case out there where you can put them in and they're threaded. And
mm-hmm.
I tried that.
Or G, thread them and put them in a regular pin cushion?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good idea.
So I've also heard that you should thread your needle from the direction it comes off the spool, that
mm-hmm.
the fibers mm-hmm. are just more naturally laying in that direction.
Right.
So
right.
I try to remember which end I cut off, but I always have a 50-50 shot of getting that right or wrong.
Okay, so just don't cut it off. That's thread the needle before you cut your thread from the spool.
Yeah, I'm a needle thread. There's little, you know, products out there. Clover has one. Bowen has one. A bunch of people do the needle threaders that are desktops that you put it in. You press a little lever. And I'm like an expert at those. So, you know, Jennifer's just told me she's like...
Not an expert.
No, they don't like her. So we're going to have a lesson.
I still use the old-fashioned kind that has the little wire on it. But I love that little thing. And I won't give it up.
Now, and I still pretend I don't need one.
Oh, there you go. Oh, yeah. See, she's a lot younger. That's what it is. She still can see the eye and the thread and everything. So,
how about the length of stitch? Now, Ann Sutton, who does beautiful work, says take tiny hand stitches and be careful of the tension. Don't pull them too tight.
Yeah. I think people do pull too tight sometimes when they're doing hand work. They think they want to tighten it up. So I'm not a tiny length person. I'm like, let's get this done, you know. So I take bigger stitches. I do bigger shapes, though. If you have a bigger shape, it's a little easier that way.
Right. And I've also heard, I know there are some appliqueers who like to use, like, glue-based it or apple glue, things like that, where you have that little tiny, tiny glue dot that can hold the pieces
mm-hmm.
in place. It
mm-hmm.
saves you on basting some of your edges down.
Mm-hmm.
But one tip that Jalili Studio uses is to make sure if you're using that glue, not to put the glue too close to the edge because you
right.
don't want to have to run your needle through the glue to get
right.
– so keep it away from – your seam allowance when you're putting that piece in so you don't have to baste through it. The other tip I love comes from Janet Nesbitt of Buggy Barn, and she says needle turn applique, if you do that by hand, doesn't have to be scary. And a lot of people think, I'm not an expert quilter. I couldn't do that. But she tells her students that if they can bind a quilt, they can applique because
mm-hmm.
after you turn that piece back on the drawn line of the applique and you fold that under, you're simply going down and catching the fold just like you do with binding. And
mm-hmm.
when you think about it that way, it sounds simple.
It does. We like to bind, so it ought to be easy.
Right. We ought to be making applique quilts galore.
Now, one of the things that I find when I teach hand work, I teach needle turn, is that – people do a lot of binding by hand, and they tend to do what's called a whip stitch, which means that your thread's traveling a little bit. It's not going, what I say, like across the street. So you need your thread to come up out of the applique straight shape, right down, straight across the street. Don't travel at all into the background. And then that way you don't have any thread visually on the edge of the applique shape.
Yeah, so your stitch is much shorter because you're stitching, I guess, perpendicular to the edge of that applique shape. So it's really just going to be really tiny as opposed to veering off.
And if you flip it over, you'll see like a longer dash on the back side.
And that's exactly what you should see.
Right, not on the front. So if somebody's saying, I can still see my thread, look at whether it's actually a distance. Because if you can see it, you're probably whip stitching and not doing a straight across stitch. Yeah.
Right. And I don't, it must be a miracle of radio, but I can still see some people rolling their eyes and saying, I'll never do applique.
Yeah.
It's not for me. So for those of you who are doing that, if you're afraid of, needle turn applique, then consider a folk art style project. And I absolutely love wool applique. It is super forgiving, super easy. It's almost easier to me than fusible applique is. There's no real preparation for it. You just cut out your shapes. If you use wool threads, they're really delicious, yummy colors and textures, and just the feeling of working on wool can be great. So you can start with simple shapes, learn to applique that way, and when it's folk art, you can forgive a multitude of stitching imperfections.
And the thread soaks into the wool.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that you can do whip stitches and things like that on the wool, and it looks really good.
And embroidery is becoming so popular again. We're seeing lots of embroidery stitches being used on wool and on other applique projects as embellishments. So for people who love that feeling of having a needle and thread in their hand and love projects that are portable, nothing better than hand applique to take with you. And you can do so much with all these great threads and embellishments these days.
So we tend to see a lot of photos from you listeners of applique quilts now after this segment. So we are going to go on, and we're going to take a little break. And the next thing you have to do after you have all these gorgeous blocks made and these applique is you have to assemble it. So we're going to talk about that. So this is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, and we'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
Hi, Carol.
Hi, Pam.
What have you been quilting lately?
I just finished a Lone Star quilt for my niece's wedding.
Oh, I can't wait to see the finished quilt.
Me too. I have so many finished tops that I'm really considering looking into a long arm of my own. Don't you have a handy quilter? I've heard good things about them.
I do, and I love my HQ18 Avante. No more UFOs at my house. I have so much space to work with, and it's so fast. The stitch regulator gives me perfect stitches every time, and the precision glide track systems makes quilting so smooth I could quilt all day.
I would love that. I've been looking at the HQ24 Fusion.
Oh, I think that would be perfect for you. It's got all the great HQ features of the Avante with more throat space. You'll love working with Handy Quilter. Their customer service is top-notch.
Visit HandyQuilter.com to request a free demo DVD or find an HQ rep in your area. Handy Quilter, designed by a quilter for quilters.
At Stash Books, we work to inspire you to use fabric to create a beautiful handmade lifestyle. We're passionate about inspirational designs, accurate instructions, and finding authors that you want to know and learn from. Visit StashBooks.com for a behind-the-scenes look at this season's new releases, including Modern Minimal by Elisa Hay Carlton, Modern Patchwork by Elizabeth Hartman, and much more. Sign up for our email list at StashBooks.com and get 20% off your next order.
Fabrics brings you the hottest new fabric lines for quilting. We work with more than 40 of your favorite independent designers, as well as in-house design staff to make sure you have the latest and greatest in fabrics. We're committed to creating high-quality products and providing excellent customer service. And for 35 years, Moda Fabrics has proudly supported the independent quilt shop. Visit your local independent quilt shop to see what's new from Moda Fabrics.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts and More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm Pat Sloan here with the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting and Quilts and More, and we are talking all kinds of techniques. Now, we have talked all about putting the quilts together, you know, the different steps. You've got blocks, you've got all this stuff, and now you have to put them into rows. You've got to make a quilt or, you know, somehow assemble all this work that you've been doing. And we have tips. Don't we have tips?
We do.
We do. And we have our favorite tips. So I'll go first because I am like, you know, the true advocate for a design wall. I think the design wall is the absolute best tool anybody can invest in. And it doesn't even cost very much to put together. It's mostly a space issue. A lot of people feel they don't have space. And so you can make a small design wall. You just need to get your quilts and your blocks up on a vertical space so that you can step away and look at them. Do you guys all have a design wall? Say yes.
Yes.
Yes. And I think there are portable design walls too. I mean, you can tack up a flannel back tablecloth on mm-hmm. the wall and use the flannel on the back of the vinyl tablecloth
yes.
and then roll it up and put it away. And I've even heard for people who really have limited space mm-hmm. that they'll make a photocopy of their blocks. If you have like a single block quilt, you can make mm-hmm. multiple photocopies and mm-hmm. shrink it down and work on a tabletop where you cut out the blocks from paper after you've made them and sort of arrange them on your
yeah.
table and can try different settings before you get ready to sew. So if you really are limited on space and you can't get a vertical design wall, there are other options like that as well.
I've also heard of, have you heard about the rolling blind? There's like some sort of blind with flannel on it, and so anybody could have that.
Right.
Easy. So let's see. Elizabeth, I know you have one.
Well, once I have my blocks where I want them, which mm-hmm. is a giant long process in and of itself, auditioning, moving around, sorting, I mark everything just with flower head pins, those great pins that have that big, maybe like a quarter inch circle head
mm-hmm.
on them.
I love those pins.
Yep, and I have one set that I use just for assembling quilt tops, so they're all marked with a permanent marker.
Oh, really?
So,
yeah.
Row one, block mm-hmm. A.
Okay.
And then I'll have row one, block B. So
yeah.
it'll be, you know, 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D. And I can just mark every single block in my quilt. So when I'm sewing all those blocks together into rows, and then when I'm sewing the rows together into the finished quilt, I mm-hmm. never get confused as to what block is where, because I put so much time into deciding exactly where each block goes.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I make really scrappy quilts, I want it perfect. I want it the way I want it.
Right.
So I don't want to mess it up when I'm just doing that last final stitching.
Do you do a lot of blocks on point? Are you mostly straight rows?
I do both.
You do?
Mostly straight rows, but yes, I do.
And when you do on point, will you do, you know, like start with the one side of the diagonal, or do you start with the middle?
I always start from, like, I'm looking at the quilt, maybe with my head cocked to the left.
Of course.
So
I can see
I'm
that.
I'm looking at rows laid out from bottom left to
okay.
upper right, and I always just do that because
you're consistent that way,
yes.
so you know where
so
you're going.
So I know exactly, yep. And if I have any question, I also love to draw things out so I can have a key sitting there and I'll know exactly what row is what.
Great. Jennifer has one.
I used to be a flat flower head pin person myself,
mm-hmm.
but I evidently get disorganized somewhere between the design wall and my sewing machine, and I would end up, you know, sewing block three to block one instead of to block two and mm-hmm. that whole thing. So my favorite tip came from Bill Kerr and Weeks Ringle of Fun Quilts, and they use school chalk to actually write on their blocks, just white school chalk. And right in the center of each block, one, two, three, it doesn't come off. It can't fall out. You don't have to move it. Now, I do wash my quilts when I'm done, so it doesn't bother me to have that school chalk off. It washes right out.
Yeah.
So I suppose if you were doing something where you didn't want to wash it, you might want to be careful of that. But for me, it works out perfectly. I know which side is up. You know, I even draw a line under my six, so I know that it's not a nine because I'm
Good
easily
tip.
Confused.
And it's going to surprise you to hear that my favorite assembly tip is for pressing.
Oh, no.
It
really,
is.
Really, Jill?
It is. When putting the rows together, I make sure that press all the seams between the blocks in one direction and then the alternating direction in the next row. Mm-hmm. And I do that so that the seam allowances will butt up to each other and have a nice join. You think about it, there'll be even number of pieces of fabric on both sides rather than having all of them on one side and just two on the other.
Right.
It just gives you a nice join.
Makes a nice weight, you know, weight and balance for the piece.
It does. And then when I'm finished, I press all the seam allowances in one direction.
After I assemble quilt tops, I usually like to make pieced backings as well. I love that.
Yeah. I always have. Yeah.
So I either use, I mean, I use a lot of fabrics that I really like on the back, so it's kind of a reversible quilt, or sometimes I use those fabrics that I wonder why I purchased.
And yes.
I have lots of fabric like that. So I'll piece that together to make a backing. Or one tip that I really liked that we got from a reader was that she used all of her sample blocks that she had made. So, you know, like all quilters, like all good quilters, I'm sure you make sample blocks to test out the instructions and the cutting and the piecing for every quilt that you make. But if you have all of those, you don't have to waste them. You could just put them together and make a truly one-of-a-kind quilt backing.
Or just even a section, couldn't you?
Right. No boring backs. That's our rule in the office. There could be no boring backs.
Now, do any of you use a camera to help you with your designing? You know, I take a picture of it when it's up on the wall because it can reduce it down in the photograph.
Absolutely. And it's amazing how much quilts look different. I mean, certainly one of the hallmarks of our publications across the board is to give people a flat shot of the quilt in addition to the styled shot. And it's amazing sometimes when you see a quilt in a photograph how different patterns emerge to you, different things where blocks abut one another, and a secondary pattern emerges that you wouldn't see when you're standing really close to it.
And it also helps you for just if you got blocks out of place or you want to check your placement, your natural eye might not notice that something's jumping out. But when you take the photograph, you go, oh, my gosh, okay, that gold is a bit much in that corner, you know, so you may even want to replace it.
Right.
I like that part. The camera is your friend. And remember, you have a camera on your phone. A lot of times people are not used to that. I find like in class, I'll say, you know, do you have a camera? They'll go, no. And I said, do you have a phone? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, right. I have a camera on my phone. So we can take pictures that way. So, you know, the next thing after you've sewn it all together is the quilting. And we're going to talk about quilting it ourselves today, not quilting with your credit card where you mail it out to have it done. We are going to talk about doing it ourselves. And you have to get it together, you know.
Right. The layering part can be as important as starting to stitch.
Elizabeth does something. You have a little technique, a little thing you like to do first.
Well, yeah, right before I layer my quilt top, I definitely stitch around the entire finished quilt top, whether it has a border or whether it doesn't. I do a lot of quilts without borders, but so it's especially important for that. But just stitch with a scant quarter-inch seam allowance all the way around your quilt top, and that just kind of, it's a stay stitch, just kind of holds it in place so it doesn't stretch out while you're doing the basting and the quilting, and you don't have a fun ruffly edge on your quilt when you're done.
And imagine if somebody's hand quilting, then that makes all those edges sturdier. You know, your seams are locked. You know, it's not going to, especially if you don't have a border, another border.
Exactly.
On it.
If you're making blocks and, you know, you don't know which blocks are going to be on the edge of your quilt if you don't have a border, then this step is essential because, yeah, you're right, it locks the seams when you stitch over them then.
So, you know, one big thing is basting, getting it ready to baste. Do you guys do your own?
Sometimes. Yeah. But before I baste, I want to make sure that all those extra little threads and pieces of lint and things that don't belong there are removed from the backside of the quilt. So I use an adhesive lint roller.
Okay, like for your clothing, you know, to get the fuzzies off,
roll
the dog hair.
All, everything that doesn't belong there,
cat
just
hair.
Roll all over the quilt, and it's amazing how
picks
much it
picks up the loose threads.
It does.
And you also have the threads that you missed snipping.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's good to go get those off of there.
It is. So you have a nice clean back.
And I know you have a unique technique, Pat, that you do when you're layering your quilt? Why don't you share that with listeners?
Yeah, I like to, I based by pins, I pin based, and I like to clamp the whole project onto my cutting table. But what I do, and I actually learned this from quilter Barbara Barber, who is an English quilter, and she gave me this tip, is to clamp just the backing. You clamp it down. I have these big orange clamps. And then you put the batting and the top, but I'd never remove the clamps so that there's no shifting. Your batting isn't going to move on that table, and your top isn't going to move. So at that point, I will pin baste the entire center, you know, so as much as there as I can. Then I unclamp it and then shift it. And then I'll clamp just the bottom again on the part that I can get to, but I pull it tight so that it's not going to have any.
That really way you crazy. Probably don't end up with any wrinkles.
Right, yeah, there's no pleats. And of course, you have to have a nice flat back, because when you're piecing your backs, it's you have to be sure it's also flat and you don't have any kind of wave or crazy stuff going on. Do you guys, do any of you spray basters or...
I spray based if I'm doing small projects. I haven't done it on big projects, but one of the things I think is important as well, whether you're doing your own on your home sewing machine or long arm machine quilting, is you also need to make sure that your back is square.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes we make backs out of a variety of pieces and maybe the top isn't quite even or the sides aren't quite even, and then we wonder why they're askew when we put them. So take the time to square up the back. You know, leaving those extra 4 or 5 inches all the way around the quilt so you have room for your back to be larger, but also making sure it's square and true.
I found that really important when you're doing a long-arm machine quilting. I mean, otherwise you have no idea where the centers are, so you can match them up.
Yeah, and don't be skimpy on the back.
Exactly. There's nothing worse than getting almost to the end and no more backing.
Right, and you got to go sew a little thing on the side or the corner and... I have one of those quilts. There's a triangle piece.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
But you only make that mistake once. That's the
That's right. Now I have lots of extra. So we're going to take a little break, because after we have that quilt basted, we get to quilt it and bind it. We know some people who love these steps. So we're going to take a little break. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We'll be right back.
Free stuff! Find out about our newest online sweepstakes and contests and how you can enter at allpeoplequilt.com/promos.
Come see what's cooking at the Moda Bake Shop website. You'll find free recipes for using the wide range of Moda pre-cuts from your favorite designers and quilt shops. We've got ideas for using a variety of ingredients, including honey buns, jelly rolls, layer cakes, charm packs, and more. Instructions with detailed step-by-step photos guide you through the recipes and the fun. New projects served up daily at modabakeshop.com.
Do you love free motion quilting but struggle to fit your project in a small throat space? The HQ Suite 16 is designed for you. With 16 inches of throat space, there is room to work on even a king-size quilt. The smooth surface of our height-adjustable table allows your project to glide under the needle with ease. The HQ Suite 16 is built with powerful HQ technology designed to handle all your quilting projects.
Visit HandyQuilter.com to request a free demo DVD or find an HQ rep in your area. Handy Quilter, designed by a quilter for quilters.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
Did you know you can find your favorite books from C&T Publishing available as ebooks at ctpub.com? From new releases to classics, there are hundreds of titles to choose from. Ebooks are instant and immediate. No more waiting around for a printed book to be delivered. They take up less space and are easily portable. Plus, ebooks use very few natural resources. Look for the ebook sale button at ctpub.com to save 20% on your ebook purchase. Start browsing now at ctpub.com.
We're listening to you. Comment on today's show and tell us your ideas for future shows. Visit the contact page on our website, allpeoplequilt.com. Now, back to the show. Here's Pat.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm Pat Sloan, and we have the very last bunch of things that we're going to talk about for our So Much Better segments, because now we have our quilt basted and we have to do some quilting on it. Now, people hand quilt and people machine quilt. So, Jennifer, hand quilting, you know, do you do a lot of it yourself? Or
I don't do a lot of it, but one tip that I do love from Lori Simpson of the Minnickin Simpson pair.
I love them.
They are fabulous. Is Lori says when she teaches hand quilting, she finds the biggest misconception is that a quilt should be taught in the hoop as if it were embroidery. Mm-hmm. So for hand quilters, the three quilt layers need to be basted together, but they should have some slack when you put them in a hoop. So if you quilt in a hoop, keep that in mind. It makes it much easier to rock the needle. And Lori's feeling is that almost everybody who begins hand quilting in a hoop starts out with things too taut.
That, you know, I like to quilt without a hoop, to hand quilt. The little that I do, I don't use a hoop either. Yeah, it's nice. It's soft. So maybe Elizabeth can talk a little bit about some design stuff, because people never really know what to put on the quilt. I mean, that's what I hear. You know, what do I quilt on there?
Well, I think both deciding what to put on there and then being confident at how you are quilting it, mm-hmm. It is just something our readers struggle with. So when you're machine quilting, one of the best tips, I think, from Cheryl Malkowski, who's mm-hmm. a great quilt designer and author, she suggests just take one motif, just simplify it, take one motif, whether it's a loop, a stipple. A stipple is actually, to me, one of the harder things to learn, so mm-hmm. I would recommend start with a loop. There's, mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything more forgiving. It can be big, it can be small, it can be, you know, have waves and curly cues and everything. Mm-hmm. So just take one motif and stitch an entire quilt with that motif. And by the time you were done, you're going to be the biggest expert at doing that motif. And then you can move on. You could just keep adding things to your repertoire. We also have another great tip from Leah Day. She's got a great blog about quilting designs.
Yes, she does.
And one thing that she suggests, you know, quilters love feathers. Mm-hmm. So feather quilting designs are just so popular. But again, those can be intimidating. Mm-hmm. So she just recommends that just kind of take it easy. Remember that when you learn to write in cursive, everybody develops their own style, and you write your name, you write in cursive in a different way. So feathers are kind of like that same thing. They're kind of like writing in cursive, even mm-hmm. the motion is. So realize that with practice, you're going to develop your own way and the own, your, you know,
like
your own
signature.
Personal, yeah, a signature look. And that's just fine. So keep it in mind, and you'll have so much fun quilting.
And we have several videos on our website at allpeoplequilt.com that mm-hmm. you can watch that show you how to make feathers and give you some advice for machine quilting. So if you're the kind of person that needs to look at a video to see someone do mm-hmm. it and sort of get the idea of what motion you're supposed to be creating, whether it's a home sewing machine or a long arm, there are some videos on there that you can watch.
A lot of times people want to try out a design, but of course you don't want to stitch it. You know, it's not as easy as a sample block like we talked about earlier. You can use the press and seal stuff and put that on top of your quilt and then draw with a Sharpie on top your shape and your design and see if you like it. And you could actually sew right through that if you wanted to, but you might have to be careful with the Sharpie, you know, test it out. Be sure it doesn't bleed through if it's not dry yet.
And that's the food packaging?
Right, yeah, the press and seal. So it's not like Saran wrap, you know, it's the other one. It's a little tacky on one side. Yeah, it's really cool.
You also had an idea for another way to practice free motion quilting.
Right. I tell a lot of people are afraid. You know, they've worked really hard on this quilt and spent a lot of time. So practice your free motion on a panel, because a panel you put no work into and it has a design. It's easier than taking just a piece of floral fabric, because you get bored, you don't know what to follow. A panel has patterns and shapes on it, and you can have something, and then you can bind it and give it away.
That's a great idea.
So binding, speaking of binding.
We finally got to our favorite part, Jill.
I know. It's always a toss-up as to who gets to do the binding, Jennifer or Jill.
This is amazing that they love binding. It's like their number one favorite thing.
This is my absolute favorite part of quilting. I love it. I don't understand quilters who don't love to bind.
I'll bind for them.
Me too. And we're not kidding. I mean, we do bind quilts for other people in the office sometimes, or if we're doing projects for the magazine that need binding.
I have some to send you.
Send them on.
Please do. But it is my favorite part. And a couple things have made binding so much more simple for me. Mm-hmm. Number one, when I finish my quilt top, I make my binding right then, whether I'm going to get mm-hmm. down to quilting it or not. Mm-hmm. I always make the binding. Now, I do that for a couple reasons. One, because I know what fabric I want to use and I have it right there, and I'm not putting it in the proverbial safe spot
right.
where I don't find it later. But also, I'm so excited when I get done quilting that I can just reach over for the binding and I'm ready to roll. I don't have to mm-hmm. press anything. I don't have to turn any edges under. I'm right. ready to just attach it to my quilt chop or quilt top and go. Then the other thing I do is, instead of using pins, I use those metal clips. They look like barrettes to me.
Oh, like hair clips.
They look like hair clips. And mm-hmm. I use those to hold my binding in place. It's so easy. I don't have to worry about poking myself with pins. It's a great way to hold your binding in place. And then my last tip is, when I start binding, I always start on the longest edge of the quilt. Mm-hmm. I try not to start right at the top center. But I try to start on the longest edge, and then I start near the corner, about 4 or 5 inches in from the corner. That way, as I'm working my way around the quilt top, when you get to that fourth and final corner that you're turning under, you just have a few more inches to go and you're done.
It's a mental game.
It is, but it's exciting.
It is. And one of my favorite tips when I'm doing binding and I'm hand sewing along is that I add a knot every 10 to 12 inches. Hmm. And this way, if the binding comes undone, mm-hmm. I only have a short area to repair. And I thought at first maybe it was just for children's quilts and they were going to get a lot of extra wear. And I mm-hmm. find that adults can use this on their,
right.
their quilts too. So I do all my quilts that way now.
Are all of you doing straight binding? Are you doing bias binding? Do you have a preference? Do you do it for a certain time, not a certain time?
I do mostly straight.
I do both. I mean, I do bias if I'm going to use a striped fabric and there's a fun reason to cut it on the bias. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes, I mean, it does have a kind of a different feel. Sometimes it feels nicer to stitch through. Again, that might just be a mental thing.
Yeah.
I like using stripes for a lot of binding, so it
right.
just depends on how the quilt top
right.
speaks to me, whether they need to be the right. short little straight ones or with the candy cane stripes.
Well, if you do your binding on the bias, and it is a quilt that's going to be used heavily, the binding is one of the first things that goes, that very top edge. And we have Greg's grandmother's quilt, and that's where the thread broke because she had straight binding. So one thread along the very edge broke, and the whole binding split open. If you do bias binding, then because it's a cross grain, when the one thread breaks, it just breaks that one little spot. So a heavily used quilt, it's more durable with bias.
That's a great tip.
Yeah, just a little tip.
And not everybody does their binding by hand. And I love it and would highly encourage it. It's very relaxing.
I do mine by machine. And I'm a strong advocate for that, too, because it's fast. You know, it has to be fast. But you usually sew from the front, and then you pull it to the back, and you're whip stitching on the backside. You reverse it. Put it on the back, pull it to the front, and then I flip my reverse stitch on the sewing machine, like a blanket stitch. I use a blanket stitch so it's pretty. I reverse it, and then most of the quilt's on the outside, and I go along and do my binding that way on the machine with the blanket stitch.
That's a great quick way to get it
very
done.
Very fast. I have a tutorial that's I have out on my website, so you can go see it.
Awesome. So, well, this has been great fun to share all these tips and techniques. And we have to finish up with what I always say is our favorite rule in the office. It's Jill's rule of quilting. It's the number one rule that no one can forget. And, Jill, you want to share that?
The rule is there are no rules. This whole thing is made up. We've presented a lot of tips and techniques here. Try everything. I encourage all quilters to try all kinds of techniques. Keep what works for you and add it to your tool chest and toss out the rest.
Absolutely. And you'll find more in Quilts and More and American Patchwork and Quilting and at allpeoplequilt.com, where we really are making it our effort this year to sew much better, and that's S-E-W, and to help people to improve their skills so they're happier, they have more enjoyment with their finished projects, and they love what they're doing, because we all love to quilt just as much as you do, and we all want to end up with something we can be proud of and happy with our finished project. So thanks, Pat, for coming in and talking with us today. It was great fun for all of us.
Yeah, I love it, love it. It's great to be here and hanging out. So we are going to wrap up today with at American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, talking with the editors, Jennifer Keltner, Elizabeth Beasy, Jill Mead, and myself, your host, Pat Sloan. Go visit us at allpeoplequilt.com online. Sign up for the newsletter and come back next week for a new show.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.